Okay, here we go. Stand by. 3, 2, 1, action.
Assume nothing.
Rash, bald-faced blasphemy.
Question everything.
I find it extremely hard to imagine.
Open your eyes.
It is quite all right to be an atheist.
The fastest growing group of people in the country has been measured as being those who have no belief or who are atheists.
You don't have to be apologetic or quiet about it.
Challenge the opposition.
You see religion on 100 fronts losing the argument.
And start thinking. This is The Thinking Atheist Worldwide.
All right, my friends, I'm going to hook you up, okay? I shall hook you up because Father's Day is almost here. June 17th is Father's Day. Can you believe it's already almost Father's Day? You're going to thank me, your dad's going to thank me, because I'm setting you up with a Father's Day gift that Dad is not only going to love, but he will actually use. It's a shaving set from our sponsor this week, Harry's. No longer are you trapped into paying way too much money for quality razors, especially at the retail stores. Harry's gives you a great shave at a fair price. They manufacture their sharp, durable steel blades in their factory in Germany. Very classy shave kits they offer online. And because it's kind of a big deal to change razors, especially if you're not sure, they're doing a $13 trial set. This includes the weighted ergonomic handle, a 5-blade razor with a travel blade cover, and rich lathering shave gel. Okay? And while you're on the website, check out the shaving sets for gifts for Dad, which are awesome. The Truman set and the Winston set. Just browse the website. I think you're going to love what you see. Listeners of my show can redeem their trial set right now at harrys.com/thethinkingatheist. Make sure you go to harrys.com/thethinkingatheist to redeem your offer and let them know I sent you to help support the show. Are you watching The Handmaid's Tale on Hulu? Like, do you realize if you are not watching The Handmaid's Tale, what you are cheating yourself out of? Now, it's not an easy watch, okay? It's not an easy show. This is pretty dark material based on Margaret Atwood's book. Season 1 apparently completed the book's content, and Season 2 is just sort of going off on its own direction. And this, for many shows, would be a recipe for disaster, but not The Handmaid's Tale, which I think Season 2 is as or more compelling than Season 1. I can't stop watching. Last week's episode finishes. At the end credits, I'm screaming at the television, no! I have to know what happens next. I have to know. The show is that good. Without any spoilers here, but the show is a dystopian future for this country. A theocratic government, which is essentially a mix of, if you were to throw North Korea, the Catholic Church, and the Church of Scientology all in a blender, you would get this future that has robbed women of their rights and of their voices and their reproductive choices, where men rule the day, and they have essentially ripped people out of their past lives, their previous lives, and given them new roles in this society. And if they do not accept those roles, they will be hanged in a public square or shot, or they will meet any number of horrible demises. And I know it sounds cliche when I say this, but there's so much commentary woven within the storytelling of this show, commentary relating to us right here, right now. The influence, reach, and overreach of government, propping itself up on the name of God, declaring to everybody essentially what Orwell was saying in 1984, right? Slavery is freedom. That God wills it, and he wishes it, and he wants it, and he demands it. And if you resist, you're not just resisting the government or the edicts of some tyrant. You are resisting the word and will of God. The show gets into identity and abuse and freedom of the press and all these heavy things. But it does so compellingly. It is really one of the best things on television ever. I can't stop watching. When the season ends, if they don't close it up after season 2, and I can't imagine they're going to stop here. I mean, I'd be good with it. I just need a finish. I need a finish line. I need closure, if you will. But, you know, if this season ends, they're going to make me wait another year for season three. It's going to be excruciating. I'm going to need therapy. I'm going to need something else to fill my mind. So, you know, I know Better Call Saul releases in the fall. Game of Thrones is coming up. At least that'll be something. But I kid you not, The Handmaid's Tale, I am telling you, it is superior storytelling. And as you are shocked and enraged, you will also be wildly entertained. Another show, real fast, another show that sort of set the hook for me was something I had seen No Illusions talk about from Scathing Atheist. He had mentioned the show Wild Wild Country on Netflix. Well, I had no idea what the show was about, so Natalie and I watched the first episode. Oh my God. I'm a child of the 80s. I don't remember this story. I don't remember any headlines about this story. I don't think it ever popped up on my radar. How did I miss this? Because it was massive. The short version, and again, this isn't really a spoiler at all. This is just the basic premise of the show, so you can decide if you want to watch. I found it fascinating. There's this tiny little town in Wasco County, Oregon. Just a few little farmers and ranchers, and they're living on this little, I don't know, the town looks like a blip, something that a plane would fly over, and you probably wouldn't even see it. They're out there living in this tiny town inside the wild country. All of a sudden, this cult leader, he's kind of a mix between the Maharishi and Buddha and Gandhi and the dude from Heaven's Gate, okay? He shows up with thousands of his cult followers, these really wacky people that are dressed in all maroon, this kind of maroon red. They buy 80,000 acres adjacent to this town. So these poor unassuming ranchers and farmers, they're just hanging out. You know, they go out and get the mail and feed the dog. And if they're still working, they'll harvest the crops. A lot of them are retired. They just want a quiet life. All of a sudden, this whole train filled with batshit just arrives at their front door, purchases 80,000 acres right next to their town, or even in their, I think it's in their town, and they start to transform the whole place into some sort of a religious community. And so you see these guys, they're out there out front in their creased Wranglers and a cowboy hat, and they're out there at the end of the driveway watching these people show up going, what the hell going on here? Who is this Osho, and what kind of religion are they practicing in there? They're fencing everything off, and they're building a whole bunch of buildings, and they're all just, I mean, it's just wild. I saw the first episode, and I'm going to have to go back and find out what happens next. But if that kind of thing interests you, Wild Wild Country on Netflix. Natalie and I were talking about it after the fact, and for me, it revealed the desire for many people to belong. Like, we ask ourselves, how does somebody end up in a cult like that? And we're going to do another show on cults before long. How does somebody who is a professional, an adult, a parent, a doctor, a lawyer, an accountant, whatever, how does someone who seems pretty reasonable end up wearing the maroon pajamas and chanting and crying and getting naked in the streets and doing all this stuff? How does this happen? And when you see people unhappy in their lives, like they're missing something in their lives, even if they're financially successful, they have the toys, they have the big house, they have the opportunities, they drive the fancy car, they're supposedly the representation of what success is here in the modern age. And yet in their hearts, they are unhappy. They are unfulfilled. They are in many ways vulnerable because they are seeking. The church often will do this in many capacities. They will find people who are restless, dissatisfied, heartbroken, unhappy, empty. And they will say, well, the empty space in your life is something that we can fill. That's attractive to a lot of people. And it was attractive to a lot of people in regard to this particular cult. Sloughing off the material possessions of this world and all the baggage and just finding freedom, finding a mental, physical, emotional, spiritual freedom that this other life that you've been living in has not provided. That's really attractive to a lot of people. And so they just leave everything. And they leave their spouses, they leave their children behind, and they just travel around the world to go join this leader, a charismatic leader who makes these amazing promises and gives them a system where they might be able to fill the holes inside their hearts. It's a fascinating observation of how religions, which are cults, by the way, of how religions work and how they attach themselves to people and how they attract so many and how they gain power. Anyway, after just one episode, that's kind of where I got. And I think it might be an interesting exercise for you as well. Wild, Wild Country on Netflix. I didn't mean to make the first part of the broadcast like a TV guide commentary, but it just happened to be on my mind, and it's a loosely formatted show today. So I finally got the chance to watch the video debate, discussion, whatever you want to call it, between Matt Dillahunty and Dr. Jordan Peterson. I was on the plane heading to LA on the 14th of this month, and I just sat there and I downloaded. I like to download stuff to my phone while I'm on the plane, so it's podcasts or movies or whatever, and I downloaded the video debate from YouTube to watch while I was traveling. Now, if you don't know who Dr. Jordan Peterson is, he's a clinical psychologist. He is a professor in Toronto, and he is kind of this. He's at least presented as this intellectual rock star who has become hugely popular in the past 12 months. I mean, his star has really started to shine. I don't know anything about Dr. Peterson. I mean, I've read any of his books or anything. So I really did go into this video expecting some fireworks as they talk about, you know, the typical stuff, philosophy, religion, God, politics, the meaning of life, whatever. And I'm sitting on the plane at 30,000 feet. And I've got my earbuds in and I'm watching. And I think I said out loud in the first half hour of the debate after a statement by Dr. Peterson, I think it was in the seat. I just like, what the fuck? The guy next to me just looked at me. We both kind of smiled and I'm like, oh, sorry about that. I'm just reacting. I'm watching a video here. It's an interesting video. He didn't even ask questions. We didn't pursue it. But it just sort of exploded. I'm like, what is this guy talking about? Now, I don't know. I'm guessing he may be one of those guys who's like Ben Carson. You know, Ben Carson is this pediatric neurosurgeon who was an expert, who may remain an expert in his medical field, but on other issues is from another planet. He's just not the guy. I mean, this is the guy who once posited that the biblical Joseph created and built the pyramids in Egypt to store grain, okay? It's just not the guy that you want to listen. He's not credible on these subjects beyond pediatric neurosurgery. And so, you know, it's possible that Jordan Peterson may be just a super genius when it comes to psychology. But when he was talking about God, religion, atheism, I just thought, this is... on Twitter, I called it a word salad. It's a lofty-sounding word salad designed to appeal to people who might be impressed by lofty language, you know, if they have no desire to actually dissect the sentences to find out what is or isn't meant or if anything can be construed from the sentences. It's one of those things where it's like, wow, that's really deep, man. That really resonates with me. But you can't pin the guy down on anything. I mean, he was invoking Jesus and Christianity, but the Jesus he was talking about had nothing to do with the Jesus of the Bible. And he was talking about how psychedelic experiences, say you have an LSD trip, that somehow this is proof of God. You can't quit smoking unless you believe in the mystical. So that sucks for the rationalists, for the secular humanists, for the non-religious people or the non-spiritual people out there. You're screwed. You'll never be able to quit smoking because you don't believe in the mystical and the supernatural. But, you know, watch this guy and then ask yourself, why is he so globally famous on issues beyond psychology? And even as a psychologist, is this guy rooted in rationality, rational thinking, in actual science? I mean, it's obvious that he has what I call in the human brain. He has a very large place in the brain where the weird shit lives. Okay. You know what? Let me play you a short clip. For context, Dr. Peterson's talking about morality, but he's essentially talking about the universal moral laws put in place by a lawgiver. Now, he's very vague about who the lawgiver might be. But Jordan Peterson's coming off a reference in this clip of one of his favorite novels, Crime and Punishment, in which someone is contemplating the murder of a genuinely horrible human being. Like, we would be better off without this horrible person. And there is the contemplation of murder. Should we kill this person so that they can do no more horrific things to the rest of humanity? And the murder of that person is sort of like a tear in the fabric of moral space. All right, so this is that statement from Peterson, and then I've included kind of an abridged version. It was a long response, but an abridged answer from Matt Dillahunty.
Right, so Dostoevsky sets up the stage. Here is the perfect situation for a murder, and all of the rational choices point in that direction. And Raskolnikov, who's also sort of torturing himself, or sort of tortured because he's sort of hungry and not very well, not thinking very clearly, he undertakes the murder, and he gets away with it. And he's before he does it, he berates himself in what I would describe as the negative atheistic style. And he basically says, look, there is every rational reason to split this woman's skull with an axe. Look at all the good I would do. Look at all the well-being I would enhance. And so he does it. And then all hell breaks loose. And what Dostoevsky was, Raskolnikov built himself up to the murder in part by laying out the rational case, but also by saying, well, there's no God. There's no metaphysical reason that's stopping me from committing this act. And there's all these reasons that appear perfectly rational pushing me in that direction. Perhaps I'm nothing but a moral coward for failing to undertake it. So he does. But what he finds out is that he broke an inviolable moral rule, something that spoke to his own soul, so to speak. And the rest of the book basically involves his sequential post-traumatic unraveling. And the post-traumatic issue is very interesting because one of the things you do see happening with post-traumatic stress disorder is that it very often occurs in people who watch themselves do something of great malevolence. By their own admission, I'm not projecting this onto them. They've watched themselves they've stepped outside the ancient moral code unwittingly and conducted themselves in a manner they cannot reconcile themselves to, and they are permanently broken. So there are works like that, Crime and Punishment, first and foremost, I would say, that do a lovely job of elucidating in narrative form how these self-evident moral presuppositions are necessarily nested inside this broader narrative metaphorical substrate, and that you use your rationality divorced from that metaphorical substrate at your peril. And I believe that to be the case. I think that's an accurate psychological summation.
Now, before I play Matt's response, I have to say that part of this discussion was essentially Jordan Peterson's assertion that atheists who are moral are not actually atheists.
There were atheist fans who wrote me that were like, oh man, I can't wait till you do this conversation with Jordan. And I was like, great, I'm not that familiar with him. What is it about him that you like, and what are the concerns? And they came back with a bunch of things. None of them said anything about agreeing with views on religion. They seemed very confused on those things. And so the good news for them is that while he thinks atheists would be murderers, he doesn't actually think you're an atheist. And that is his way of getting around acknowledging things that conflict with his worldview. I don't get to decide who is or isn't a true Christian. I didn't even get to decide that when I was a believer. I definitely don't get to do it now. So if somebody tells me they're a Christian, I'm going to have to accept that. I have a model in my head of what that means. I have a model in my head of what it means to be a Muslim, but I'm willing for them to explain to me what their model is. I know people who identify as Christian atheists. They really love the stuff that Jesus said, but they don't actually believe there's God. You know, Thomas Jefferson famously cut out the Jefferson Bible and removed every reference to the supernatural and miracles and things like that because he really admired the teachings of it. And sure, I think you could be a cultural Christian in that if you wanted to. It's strange to me that I'm not sitting here with somebody like Ray Comfort when I'm told you're not really an atheist because you're too good to be an atheist. And this is what atheists hear all the time when they come out. They've been sidelined because of religious privilege around the world for years. And then atheists come out to their family members or friends or people they've known for years. And they're like, you're an atheist? How can that be? You're such a good person. I've known you all this time. It's because the mindset of what people have about what an atheist is has been poisoned by religious proclamations. We have been denigrated from the pulpit, and it is seeped into every aspect of culture, right up to the height of intellectual pursuits. And it's time for that to end.
Dr. Jordan Peterson, what the hell are you talking about?
I am not remotely impressed. Look, I'm not a great mind. I'm not one of these guys who's looking at him as, you know, an intellectual peer. You say, who stands upon the mountain of his own intellect, looking down upon the rest of these posers. No, no, no. I'm just a guy. But I do have, you know, a working brain and the ability to reason. And when I hear, the word salad that came out of his mouth during this hour and 40-minute exchange, I walked away thinking, I'm not sure I can trust anything the guy says. What else is going on in my life? My extremely random life on this extremely random monologue of a show. You have to forgive me. They're doing construction right across the street from my home studio. They're building a house over on the corner. It's not too far away. Been working on it for a few months now. And the guys who were out there, they were doing some rock work out front. And they must love 80s music because they've got their van parked out there and they've got the doors open, windows down, and they're cranking the 80s music. So I'm out there letting the dogs out and getting the mail out front here just a while back this morning. And they're playing Def Leppard from the Hysteria album, you know, the song Love Bites, which is right out of my youth. And I'm waiting on the dogs. And of course, you know, they're sniffing around looking for the perfect spot, like one day they'll be judged for whether or not they chose the perfect plot to urinate on. They make a circle, make another circle. No, that's not it. They walk over here, sniff, 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 another circle. No, that's not it. And they essentially make a grid over the entire yard while I'm on the porch going, come on, hurry up. I've got work to do. You're killing me. And it gives enough time for the song, which is playing across the street, to implant itself in my brain. Becomes that ear bug. And so all morning I've been walking up the stairs, I'm going into the kitchen to make lunch, I'm getting a few things done. The whole time I'm just like, I don't want to touch you too much, baby. Can't get it out of my head. Making love to you might drive me crazy. I can't do a Joe Elliott's voice. I don't know if anybody can actually do his voice. So the whole time as I'm sitting here behind the microphone in the studio, it's, I know you think that love is the way to make it down, 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 but I don't want to be there when you decide to break it. Ah, love bites, love bleeds. I don't even know what that song means. Do you know what the song is about? Love bites, love bleeds, it's bringing me to my knees. Love kills, love dies, it's no surprise. Love bites, love bleeds, it's all I need. Oh, I am a shitty singer. I'm terrible. I'm sorry to do that to you. But when you're among friends and you feel comfortable, you can do that kind of thing. Maybe it's stuck in your head now. You are welcome. You're welcome. I caught just a few minutes of the royal wedding, and I'm happy for Prince Harry and Meghan Markle. I really am. I can be cynical about this stuff, but yeah, they seem like good people. William and Harry seem like good guys, honestly. I mean, they really do. They seem to be more self-aware about the more than occasional circus of the royal family than others, in my opinion. They just seem to have that wink, like, you know, we kind of get it. We understand. And they seem like moral guys, moral people who want to make the world a better place. Good for them. But Natalie's watching the royal wedding, and she's, you know, enamored of the fairy tale and the gowns and the decor and the beautiful ceremony and all those things. And I lasted about 3 minutes, and I went upstairs and went to work. So I went on Twitter, and I asked the question, you know, please help me understand the idea of the royals.
the royal family and the idea that by what some would consider divine birthright, you are born superior to someone else. Now, this is automatically where the polarization starts, because some people were like, absolutely, they're better than the rest of everybody else, or they think they are, and it's an atrocity. And then you had other people say they aren't superior. They're simply born into the family, given a certain measure of responsibility. They have to dedicate their entire lives to serving their country. It comes with monumental responsibility. They don't think they are better. They are simply royals or the royal family. I'm not really sure how to process that one. You know, the role of the royal family in relation to the rest of the government or the government, and, you know, this idea that someone can be born, just born, into a situation where they are treated with such adulation and deference for what? It's like being one of the Kardashians. You just won the genetic lottery. You won the birth lottery. You are born into a family of tremendous wealth, privilege, and opportunity. And for the rest of your life, you will be celebrated, even almost worshipped, because of where you were born and who you were born to. It's an interesting conversation about how we qualify those we admire and who is genuinely worthy of our admiration. And is it about the fairy tale? Is it about tourism? Is it about tradition? Or is it something else? I think people may still be engaging in those conversations on that particular thread even now, talking about their own opinions. I mean, honestly, if, you know, if it works and it's a tradition you feel brings benefits and really does attract tourists and do all the things that they say, knock yourself out. But the idea of having a queen, a king, a prince, a princess, you know, what would that be like here in the United States? And you have somebody like Donald Trump in power, would Ivanka Trump then automatically be royalty? Perhaps she already is. Some would consider her royalty. And their children and their children and their children in perpetuity, forever. They would have inherited the authority, the affluence, the influence, the celebrity, the power, because of a specific bloodline. It's an interesting conversation. Where do you fall on that one? Another story of note, and I can't believe it is a story of note. I'm guessing, I am hoping you saw the story this month. It was published, I think, first in Inside Edition, about the guy who caught the angel on camera. It's a dude from Michigan. Guy's a local fire chief. His name is Glenn Thorman. Got a motion sensor camera, I guess, out near the front of his house, pointing out to the yard slash drive slash wherever. The cars are parked. You can see his gray pickup truck with the camper shell on it. And in the photograph, in the screen capture, you see an angel. And you got to Google image search it, but I'll do my best to describe it. It looks like it stands about 8 to 9 feet tall, and it has human characteristics, plus the angel wings. Of course, it is blurry. There's a little head on it, and you can see the torso and what looks like arms, and perhaps even a little strap coming down the chest. You can't really see the legs, so, you know, I don't know if the angel's legs are just being blurred by the wings, but it looks like there is a flapping angel creature thing right over this pickup truck in the front yard, and I'm guessing in the video, you can actually see the angel flying. I've only seen the still image. Well, I mean, if you're Glenn Thorman of Michigan, this has got to be a sign from God. He tells Inside Edition, he says, I was just like, whoa, I thought, that's an angel. His wife came in and took it even further. Her name is Rhonda. Quote, we're just strong believers, she said. So it was just awesome to have that picture come through, and there's just no way that it's not an angel. Inside Edition reports that Rhonda says this is a sign, the sign that her home is blessed by God. The image goes viral, and you can see social media split. right? There's a group of eager believers who were like, praise Jesus, it's a sign from on high. An angel has come to visit this couple in northern Michigan, stand on their truck or whatever they're saying. It's obviously an angel. The other group is yelling at the top of its voice, probably laughing as they type the words, it's a moth, not an angel. It's a moth. A moth flew in front of the security camera, and this made global news. Hell, I took a screenshot. I've got a security camera that faces both the front and the backyard of my home. At one point, this was last year, a spider crawled across the lens. Now, I looked up, and it looked like a 1950s horror movie, because it was sitting right on top of the lens. It really did. It was, and I took a screenshot of it, and I was like, OMG, and I made a big joke, blah, ha, ha. These people see a moth fly in front of a screen, this blurry motion of the moth wings going 1,000 miles an hour, and they decide that this is a sign that God has blessed the home and family. It just blows my mind that somebody would be so desperate for a sign, would be such a pattern seeker in a spiritual context, that they would think that if there is Jesus or God or Yahweh up there, I'm sure they're Christians, that instead of actually curing cancer or feeding the starving children or coming down to try to make sense of the chaos that is this world and alleviate the avalanche of global suffering that we see every day in our news feeds, instead, his power would be targeted toward the driveway of a family in northern Michigan so that they could experience a gray, blurry thing that looks like it's sitting over the pickup truck. And people lap this stuff up. It's insane. It's insane. My friend Susie sent me a fascinating article published in Radio Today on the 22nd of this month. The title of the article is Radio Presenters and Journalists Among Top Jobs for Psychopaths. Posted it on my wall with a big question mark, like, we have to keep an eye on you, Seth. The article says, if you work in radio, you're more likely to be subject to psychopathic behavior from your coworkers, according to the findings presented in a new book by Oxford research psychologist Dr. Kevin Dutton. He works at the Department of Experimental Psychology at Oxford University. He's written a book called The Wisdom of Psychopaths, What Saints, Spies, and Serial Killers Can Teach Us About Success. The book details the jobs most likely to attract psychopaths, with journalists and media presenters taking out the second and third spots, respectively. Well, who was number one? The number one job likely to attract people with psychopathic behavior is that of CEO. Keep an eye on the boss, my friends. Might be a psychopath. Other jobs include public servants, police, surgeons, chefs, and lawyers. Is this real? RadioToday.com features the article written by Zanda Wilson. All right, keep an eye on me, folks. If I start to exhibit any psychopathic tendencies, you will, of course, let me know. Okay? I guess I'll end this broadcast on a more serious note. And this is a very happy ending to what was a very serious story. I guess it was a few months ago, we had a guy named William who had called the broadcast, and we were talking about death and grief and overcoming and those types of things. William had lost his wife to cancer a few years ago, and he was really struggling financially. And though we spoke on the radio and he was very positive and we had a wonderful conversation, I was struck by the idea that we as humanists could maybe rally around this guy and do something special for him, just sort of lift him up in his hour of need, you know. And so after the broadcast, I asked our listeners if they would join me in helping to raise $3,000 for William. Just because. Just doing good for goodness sake. Just for the hell of it, right? Let's come together and let's help a guy we've never met before, and let's do something amazing for this person. Our goal was $3,000. Our listeners raised for William $4,095, and that number continues to go up. Well, a few days ago, he sent me an email, a follow-up email, and he said this, and I wanted to share it with you. He said, "Thanks to the folks that contributed to the fund that you set up, I was able to purchase a truck to replace my broken car. Also, it allowed me to restart my maintenance business, and it's been going well enough that I had to hire a part-time helper. Things have turned around so much since March, it's kind of surreal. I owe you and the compassion of this group a big thank you for helping to turn my circumstances around. I've started to reveal my skepticism to select friends and acquaintances, and the effect of coming out has been energizing to me and those that get it. I've also found a new female partner who has gone through a similar journey. We've decided to walk this grief thing out together for the foreseeable future. We know that nothing lasts forever as a result of our past losses, but we know we are a good fit for now. Saying all this to say, without your podcast, none of what has happened positively would have occurred, and I personally thank you for your kindness and hard work in giving me a place to go while finding reality again. William." William, I so appreciate you, my friend, and I'm going to defer right away to my listeners who went above and beyond and continue to amaze me with their goodwill and generosity and good humor and just desire to be there for other people whenever they can. So they deserve the thanks and the credits. This is just a conduit. They are the ones who were able to funnel those resources in your direction, and I'm honored to be a part of it. That is a happy ending to a story that I think we can all draw encouragement from, and I can't think of a better way to close the broadcast today. You made a difference in someone's life, my friends. You changed a life and helped someone start a new chapter. That is what it's all about. Feels pretty good. Have a wonderful week, and I will see you back here next Tuesday on the Thinking Atheist radio broadcast.
Follow the Thinking Atheist on Facebook and Twitter. Watch dozens of original videos on the Thinking Atheist YouTube channel. And visit our website for resources, links, contact information, the editor's blog, and more. TheThinkingAtheist.com.